Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on 4/20/2013. This is episode 971. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ShareFile.com. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Visit ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter Tech Guy. And by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's why I love my cloud-based phone system from RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And when you want to buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit RingCentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. And by Ting.com. Ting is a new mobile phone service that just makes sense. You'll save money with Ting, pay for what you use, not a penny more, and you don't need a contract. Plus, Ting offers unlimited devices on a single pooled plan. To save $25 on your first Ting device, visit techguy.ting.com. Well, hey, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time, yeah, to talk about computers and the internet and cell phones and camcorders, MP3 players and home theater and all that rigmarole. Our home theater guy, Scott Wilkinson, joins us at half past the hour. Gee, a lot has happened since I was here last. Holy cow. What a week, huh? We're just kind of coming out of it, but what an incredible week it was. And while there really isn't a whole lot of tech angle, there's a few. In fact, I read an interesting article today on Slate that said, you see, we should have more cameras everywhere. It's true. They caught the guys or the suspects. They were able to track them down because there were pictures everywhere. There was video, surveillance camera video of them placing the bomb. There were pictures not just from surveillance cameras, but, of course, because it's the Boston Marathon, there are lots of digital pictures everywhere. Lots of images from people who were snapping. It was probably one of the most recorded scenes of all time. I mean, blanketed. So there's some coverage there. There's some technical stuff going on, technology coverage there. But it's, you know, I find it, you know, at the one hand, I always bemoan the fact that there are so many surveillance cameras. Now we're thinking, well, maybe not such a bad thing. And that's what this Slate article said. You know what? We should have more cameras, not less. Yeah, nobody likes being watched, but you are, after all, in a public place. True. You know, if these cameras can not only catch guys after the fact, but also prevent crime, shouldn't we have more of them? It's hard to argue against that. Gene X in our chat room says, you know, the UK has cameras everywhere on every corner. And in fact, there are, you go through London, you are more recorded than anywhere else in the world. And yet, and for a long time, I and many of us just kind of said, that's terrible. And maybe not. Maybe we have to rethink that. What would be the negative of having cameras everywhere? Especially with software on the other end that could recognize problems, things like that. We could talk about that. 8888 Ask Leo. That's, you know, it's an interesting question. Interesting question. No privacy, but you're in public, right? I'm not proposing there be cameras inside your house. That would be Big Brother. Literally. 1984. Technology also used when they discovered the younger brother in the boat. They sent a helicopter with the infrared imaging over it, and we were able to see him. They were able to watch him move. Night vision goggles used once sunset to give the police the advantage. Very high tech, those night vision goggles, gathering the littlest, tiniest bit of light and making it, amplifying it so that you can see as well as if it's in daylight. A lot of technology involved. 8888-ASK-LEO. If you're going to put cameras everywhere, Dr. Mom makes a good point, you're going to have some pretty strong regulation on where you can't put them. But now Google's starting to push out this Google Glass. You've seen this, right? This happened this week. They started sending out these specs, these goggles that they've been talking about a year. They sent them out, started sending them out to early adopters. And that's a camera on your face that you could have on all the time, right? And I'm starting to see on all the social networks, I think the hashtag is seen through glass or something like that. There's a lot of stuff. And this is just the few, dozen people who've got them already. Imagine once everybody has them. Then what happens to privacy? It's the case, though, isn't it, that when you start worrying about your security, you start being willing to give up certain personal liberties. Ben Franklin said that much more eloquently. It's an interesting question. Would we have caught those guys so fast? Would there have been more deaths? They obviously were bent on more destruction. Had those cameras not been there, had we not been able to see them in the act and then use media, the internet, to put the information out. Of course, you could also say, yeah, but would they have known how to make the bombs if it weren't for the internet? Well, I don't know. The Anarchist Cookbook's been in libraries and bookstores for a long time, but that stuff probably, it seems most likely, it's the most convenient that they found that information on the internet. It's a double-edged sword, isn't it? Interesting. The chat room's pretty well convinced they don't want more cameras. Ben Franklin said, those who are willing to give up freedom for security deserve neither. There's something to that effect. 8888-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536. And I think the fear, of course, is of an authoritarian government that would use those to track people, to suppress dissent, things like that. And, of course, the information that flowed from the social networks was mixed. Some of it was amazing. You could watch the tweets as the bombs went off, as the people were chased. There were a lot of people listening to Boston police scanners and then tweeting and posting the audio. It got to so bad the Boston Police Department said, stop. Stop. You're giving out information. That's material to the ongoing investigation. Knock it off. I noticed that most people did not knock it off. Probably not. Most people didn't even see their request. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. 888-827-5536. If you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion, our website, techguylabs.com. If you have a thought about this, I don't know. I've of course for years said, oh, we don't want more cameras. We don't want more government surveillance. On the other hand, you are in public. Those cameras probably saved lives. They cut those guys real quick. We'll talk a little bit about Google Glass. I don't have mine, but I suppose I will. I got a reservation a year ago. I have a low reservation number, but I think Google's parsing them out of order, giving them to people they think are more influential than others. Or maybe they're giving them to people who will use them more than others. Finally got my Pebble Watch Kickstarter project, the idea a wristwatch that ties to your phone and gives you notifications on your wrist. Apple and others are rumored to be doing something like that. We'll talk about that. And I got the new HTC One, which came out this week, the first of a new generation of Android phones. It's quite impressive. Quite impressive. We could talk about that, too. 888-827-5536. Toll-free from anywhere in the U.S., outside the U.S. Skype me. It's a toll-free number, +1-888-827-5536. If you call that with Skype, it won't cost you anything. And, of course, our website is techguylabs.com. You've heard me mention the chat room. Well, you can get in there by going to techguylabs.com. Social media got a lot of things wrong. There's a very famous instance. Reddit, the website, decided they had identified the pictures that were first put out by the FBI as a student at Harvard who was not, in fact, involved. That poor kid is now in hiding. you got a feel for him. But I also noticed that the news networks got more than their fair share of things wrong. Even to the point where Brian Williams called the satellite imagery of the house with the boat a Google Earth imagery, when in fact it was from Bing, Microsoft, their big competitor. He corrected it, but I have to think that Microsoft, which was an investor in MSNBC until recently, must have been a little bit upset. Oh, he's not in hiding. He's been missing for weeks. Oh, my goodness. Well, all right. Brown, not Harvard. All right. Well, see how the media gets stuff wrong all the time. All the time. 8888. Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's talk about it. Nathan making a very good musical point there. Who's watching me? You know, in fact, the chat room brought this up. They said, look, the IRS insists that they can go through our email without a warrant. If there's video surveillance of us everywhere we go at all times, what's to keep them from, you know, and other government agencies from looking at what we do? You know, it's an interesting issue. It might be able to save lives, yet at the same time... I guess it's an invasion of privacy. You're in public, aren't you? 8888 Ask Leo. Lawn Dog saying, well, why don't we have privacy rights on our cell phones? Why isn't the email protected? Well, because it's digital. And it's treated differently, unfortunately, because it's digital. Just merely because it's digital. And so it somehow is treated as something a little different. For instance, it's presumed that email after, 180 days is abandoned, and so anybody can read it, things like that. In your office, if you are on a phone call and the boss listens in on the other line, and as soon as he detects or she detects it's personal, the law says hang up. She has to hang up. But surveillance on your digital devices, 100%, no problem. Courts have said, again and again, yeah, you have no privacy rights if you're using the computer at work and the internet connection at work. 8888 Ask Leo. Nathan, could you put some dots at the end of the sentences? Because I you know what I'm saying? I can't see. Tell me who the first caller is, and I'll get them on. 8888 Ask Leo. We're moving the call screening up here to the studio because this isn't working. Nothing, huh? Well, I'll talk some more. Let's talk a little bit about the HTC One. This is the phone that just came my way from AT&T. They shipped it out on Tuesday. They're now selling it on T-Mobile, AT&T, and Sprint. This is the first of the hot new Android phones. Boy, is it hot. And hot, when I say hot, literally. This is a 1.7 gigahertz quad-core processor in this thing. And it does heat up, but they need some pretty heavy processing, even heavier graphics processing, because the HTC One is pushing the highest resolution screen I've ever seen. It's 4.7-inch screen diagonally, 1920 dots lengthwise, 1,080 dots top to bottom. So it's a dot pitch, or the number of dots per inch of... the dots per inch is, I think, 460-something. Which means, I mean, this is pushing more pixels than many computers. More pixels than the iPad. As a result, it looks very crisp. You can't see any dots. It's maximum retina. But it also, that's a lot of work it's doing. And so as I use it, I notice it gets a little bit hot on the back. It's aluminum, beautiful aluminum case. But battery life yesterday was also a little bit short. And since you can't remove the battery, that's got to kill you. I'm just going to pick up a line, see what happens. Can I do it? Can I do it? I can't. You there now, Nathan? No. Am I connected? Yeah. I'm just abandoned here in the radio station. Everybody's gone out to lunch. Nathan.
Steven, line one.
Thank you. Steven in line one. Go ahead.
Hi, Leo. I have a couple of questions and a comment for the visually handicapped across the nation. And one of my questions is, I am visually handicapped, and I use a 32-inch Sanyo high-definition TV monitor as my computer monitor. But I only get about a 25-inch screen resolution. I was wondering how to push that out to make it 32.
I'm sorry. I don't understand. You want to make the screen bigger?
Well, actually...
You want higher resolution on the same screen?
No, I'm sorry. There are about 3.5-inch black bars at either side.
Right. Right. I understand what you're saying. Yeah. Then you see that sometimes when you watch movies that are a different aspect ratio than the screen.
Actually, everything shows up
yeah.
at that aspect ratio.
Yeah. And the monitor is a LED monitor, LCD monitor?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So an LCD monitor has a specific, what we call native resolution. That's the resolution, the number of actual dots on the monitor. And what's happening is the computer is telling the monitor, hey, this is whatever, a 1960 by 1080 screen or whatever it is. And uh-huh. so the monitor is putting that many dots on the screen, but that's not as many dots as it has.
Okay.
So you need to match the resolution that you're putting out to the display's native resolution.
Oh, okay.
Now, this is what happens, though, when you drive a TV from a computer, often. Because a computer doesn't know what the heck that device is. It's not a computer monitor. It's not intended for computers. So I would, if you can, you're going to try to get a resolution, look on the resolutions available to you and see if you can get one closer to the native resolution of the monitor. You need to find out what that native resolution is.
All righty.
You could scale it. Scaling is saying, look, I know it's a 1920 by 1080 picture, but I want you to blow it up to 2560 by 1600. What'll happen is it gets a little fuzzy because it's not dot for dot the same, right?
Yeah, right now I think I've got it at 1024 by
yeah.
Something.
Yeah, 768. So that monitor is capable of a lot more. That's what the black bars are. That's the so what you need to do is first figure out what can the monitor do.
Oh, okay.
And then see if you can figure out what your computer is capable of, and see if you can set your computer to that resolution.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
My second question was recently I switched computers here, and I used to have a text-to-speech program, a free text-to-speech program that I was using, and I downloaded the recent version, and it didn't work anywhere near as well, and I was hoping that you might have, or somebody in your chat room, might have a suggestion for a free text-to-speech reader.
Text-to-speech, and you're on Windows?
Yeah, so what happens is I buy e-books, and I have them read to me by the text-to-speech.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Now, Windows has one. Windows has one built in. Are you using that one, or you've purchased something else?
I tried Narrator, but
Narrator, yeah.
It only tells you what you run the cursor over, whereas what I like to do is select all, and then have it read the chapter to me while I sit in my chair.
Right. I thought you could do that in Windows.
Maybe you can, but I have trouble making it out. My vision is so bad.
Yeah. Pretty sure that's part of Narrator, as you can say, select the text. I'm not sure, though. Windows XP, is that what you're using?
Windows 7.
7. So go to the accessibility settings, and I think you can turn it on in the accessibility options.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then it'll read to you. And I think it's actually the narrator in Windows is pretty much just as good as anything else that's out there. There are other programs that can do that.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think narrator is pretty darn good. So give that one a try.
Yeah, my comment was recently I found.
I'm out of time. I'm sorry. You hear that music? That means we're done. I got to take a break. Leo Laporte, thank you though. The tech guy. Hi, Scott. Wilkinson's the home theater guy joins us every week to talk home theater. He is in charge of editorial at the avsforum.com. Great place to find out all about audio and video. HomeTheaterHiFi.com columnist and host of This Week. Actually, it's not This Week in Geek. It's Home. Although that would have been a good name. Home Theater Geeks. at twit.tv/HTG. Did a good headphone segment. I finally got around to listening to that.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago now, I guess.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, it's interesting. I got a question from somebody about that very wireless headphone that apparently you've now installed in the
studio.
Yeah,
we love them. They sound great.
Yes, the Sennheiser RS series.
Yes.
I don't know which one. There are several in that series, but they're all very good because they take one transmitter and can send out to multiple headphones.
Yeah, we have four headphones off one transmitter.
Yeah, which
is
great.
And the sound quality is excellent. My mom's good. Listening to it right now. Actually, she took the headphones off. I guess she doesn't care anymore.
Yeah, she's heard it all.
Put them back on, Mom. So what's up in the home theater these days?
Well, I got a question from Stanford Brown, who wondered about those headphones and says, how do you connect them up to your TV or to your AV receiver? Well, it's very simple. They have an 1/8-inch stereo jack on the back. It's the same kind of jack that you would find on an iPhone or any portable device for audio. And you have to get a special cable, usually. Usually the TV or the AV receiver has twin RCA outputs, you know, the red and white outputs on the back of most audio devices.
That's analog out, right?
That's analog out. You need to get a cable from Radio Shack or someplace. They're only a couple bucks. It's not any big deal. That has the RCA connectors on one end of the cable and the 1/8-inch stereo plug on the other end. So you connect the red and white RCAs to the back of your receiver or your TV, the 1/8-inch stereo plug to the input of the transmitter, you're all set. That's all you need to do.
And so that's what we're doing. We have a headphone amp, I guess, that we're plugging it into because we have other headphones, and that's where it gets the audio. Works great.
Exactly right. Yep. Now, I've got a couple other questions about about building a home theater in a basement. You know, a lot of people like to do this, and it's really a great thing to do because generally speaking, basements are pretty well light controlled. Some might have windows, maybe near the ceiling of the basement, but the more you can light control your home theater, the better the picture's going to look, really. And so the first fellow, John Costanzo, is asking about speakers. He's got an older Onkyo receiver, still very good, I'm sure. But he's got really old speakers and no subwoofer. And he says, "What should I get? I'm looking for a good speaker package. My budget is $250." Well, for that kind of money, I would say really the only thing you would want to look at is a sound bar. And we've talked about sound bars plenty on this show. But if you really want a surround speaker system, that is a real speaker system with front, right, left, and center, and rear surrounds, and a subwoofer or side surrounds, my best recommendation for a budget system is this speaker system from Pioneer, which is designed by a very famous speaker designer by the name of Andrew Jones, who also designs Pioneer's super high-end speakers from on their division called TAD. And those, you're going to spend $60,000 for a pair of speakers. and they sound fabulous. I mean, they're amazing. But he has taken his knowledge and moved it into a 5.1 speaker package for under $600. Now, you might think, well, how can you get the sound of a $60,000 pair of speakers into a 5.1 system for $600? Well, you can't, of course. But Andrew Jones is a very smart guy, and he has designed these very inexpensive speakers to sound far better than you would expect or than anybody else can put together for $600 retail. And you're going to get 5.1 speakers, including that subwoofer. So I really strongly recommend, John, that you up your budget if you possibly can, and you get those Pioneer speakers. The package is it comes in two packages. You can buy them separately, too. One has a pair of floor-standing front, right, and left, and one has a pair of bookshelf, smaller speakers that you'd have to either put on stands or put in a bookshelf. Generally not a good idea. Because if you put a pair of speakers inside of a bookshelf, you're basically putting the enclosure inside another enclosure. And that's going to change the acoustics. So I don't recommend that. If you can get the and this $600, by the way, is for the floor standing front, right, and left. The speaker package is called the SP PK52, I think, something along those lines. I don't remember the exact number, but if you go to the Pioneer website and look at their home theater speakers, you will find them easily. And that is really strongly what I recommend. somebody else, Stephen Hendrickson, is building a home theater in his basement. And he's got a different question. His question is, he's got a lot of room behind the wall where the screen is going to be. And he wants to put a projector behind that wall and shoot it onto a rear projection screen. Now, this is very cool. Part of the reason he wants to do that is the ceiling height in the basement is only 7 feet. So he's not really going to be able to host Shaquille O'Neal or Kobe Bryant or any of those basketball players because they're taller than 7 feet unless they stoop. But for most folks, it's okay. But hanging a projector from the ceiling is not real practical. So he wants to go with a rear projection system. And as we've talked about in the past, Mitsubishi was the last company standing with real rear projection TVs. So now the only option if you want to do that is to put a projector, a front projector, as they're called, behind a rear projection screen. And you can still do that, and people do. Those are mostly very high-end installations. You can do it yourself, though. It's certainly possible. He asks, will I lose any image quality with a rear projected image? And the answer is no. If you get a good rear projection screen, this is what we have to think about here, is the interaction between the projector and the screen. Can you still project 3D content? That's a very good question. The projector needs to send out a synchronization signal to the 3D glasses. So I'm sure it would be possible to get what's called an IR extender and connect that to the projector and then bring that out to the wall where the screen is so that the IR or infrared signal could hit the 3D glasses. That's a little bit of a custom job, though, so it's going to take a little more working out of things to get that happening. The biggest concern is the rear projection screen material. Now, there are a couple of companies that make it. Stewart is probably the most well-known. That's the most well-known screen company in the world, really. And I know they make a rear projection product. A company called Blue Ocean makes one. The problem with rear projection screen material is it's very expensive. And Stephen here is saying he has a budget of $8,000 for the screen and projector. I'm not sure he's going to be able to do it in that. Depends on the size of the screen, of course, because the larger the material, the more it's going to cost. In general, I recommend projectors at a minimum. You want to spend about $3,000, roughly. You want to plan on that because there are plenty of great projectors in the $3,000 range. Of course, you can go much higher than that. You can go into the six figures, but there really isn't any need to. The Epson 5020 is a fabulous, fabulous projector at around $3,000, a little bit less list, actually. So you might be able to get it for $2,500, something like that. It's the screen that's going to kill you. The Stewart rear projection material is called Star Glass, and it is actually sort of a piece of glass, and that's going to be very expensive.
Thank you, Scott. Scott Wilkinson, editor-in-chief of Home Theater Hi-Fi. Actually, you're a columnist at HomeTheaterHiFi.com and Home Theater Geek, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones we go. James in British Columbia. Hello, James.
Hi.
Hey.
Oh, thank you for answering my phone call.
Well, my pleasure. Thanks for calling.
I have a quick question. I am planning a trip to New York City next month, and I have an iPhone 4 and a Samsung Galaxy S2, and both of them are unlocked.
Unlocked. So that means you can use them on any carrier.
Yes, and I'm hoping to get a pay-as-you-go or like a prepaid plan with data. Do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, you know, this is something everybody does in Europe all the time. You go to Great Britain, you buy a little card, you pop it in your phone, and suddenly you have a British phone number, British data plan, works great. The U.S. is not quite so wired into that. So what we do in the they do have GoPhones and pay-as-you-go service. The data plans are not going to be anywhere near as inexpensive. Although, you know, you're from Canada. You're used to expensive data plans.
Yep.
So, you know, it won't seem so different from what Rogers offers. But There's one called Red Pocket. Damon in Austin suggests in our chat room. Red Pocket. T-Mobile's got prepaid. AT&T has GoPhones. So there are carriers that do this. You'll have to go to the carrier directly. Mike in New Brunswick says you have to wait until you get to the U.S. because they won't take Canadian credit cards. So you can't set it up ahead of time. You have to actually go into the store. And you'll probably be going in to the phone store. They tell me Walmart also does this. That's the big chain drugstore. I don't know if it's fair to call Walmart a drugstore anymore. I don't know what you call it, but you know what I'm talking about. So I'm not sure what the best one is, to be honest. Mike in New Brunswick says $60 for unlimited talk, text, and 2 gigabytes of data. That seems fair. Who was that, Mike, that you did that with? H2O is the name of the company. That seems fair. Should be able to get them in New York. You could probably look online and find out more about it, find an H2O store. This is one of the advantages, folks, of using SIM cards, of the GSM phones. Here in the States, we have two different kinds of cell phone technology. Verizon and Sprint use CDMA, and AT&T and T-Mobile use GSM. And that's why when you're getting a phone on AT&T and T-Mobile, they give you a little, looks like a little small cardboard-backed computer chip, a SIM card that you put in the phone. That SIM card is you. That's your personality. That's your phone number. That's your account. And you can transfer it to a different phone. The problem is the phones, the handsets, are often locked to individual carriers. So this HTC One, I bought it from AT&T. That's why it says AT&T on the back. And actually, it doesn't say it. It has a little AT&T Globe logo on the back. And that means that this phone, even if I popped out the SIM card and put a SIM card from another carrier in it, wouldn't work because it'd say, no, I'm not going to work on anything but the AT&T network. Now, you can unlock phones, although it's illegal, according to the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. And in many cases, carriers, AT&T has said they will do this. If you're in good standing, we'll unlock your phone. So if you're traveling and you have a GSM phone, AT&T or T-Mobile, then simple enough. You go to your carrier, say, I'm going to be going overseas. Can you unlock this? They'll unlock it. And then you can get a SIM card somewhere else. If you're coming in from Canada, as our caller was, he's got a phone, two unlocked phones. So he can pop a SIM card in from an American carrier and all will work. All will be well. Gabriel is on line 3. Yorba Linda, California. Hi, Gabriel. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good morning, Leo.
Morning.
I'm running Windows XP 32-bit. And I went out and bought 4 gigs of RAM.
Yeah.
Control memory, you know, matching.
Yeah.
I dropped them in.
Yeah.
And I know that the 32-bit can only recognize about 3.5 of those gigs. It won't recognize the full 4.
Yeah. I mean, technically, 32-bit operating systems recognize 4 gigs. Unfortunately, a little bit of that 4 gigs is reserved for the system. So, yeah, you end up getting 3.5, something like that, free. It's different on every system.
Yeah, so my dilemma is now that I put it in, my computer actually takes double amount of time to boot up.
More RAM and you slowed it down.
Yeah. And I'm looking here. I'm in the BIOS setup utility. I've been, you know, racking the internet. I actually went to the chat room and they said to call in. So
they said, wow, maybe Leo. That's interesting. More RAM.
And the only other thing I did, and I don't think it should affect, is but I put a new Asus gigabit network card on the PCI slot, and that's running fine. I uninstalled and reinstalled it yesterday. But yeah, that's the only other thing I added at the same time.
Well, I guess it's always possible that you screwed something else up when you were inside. I can't think of why more RAM would cause a problem, as long as it's the right RAM. And usually it either works or it doesn't work, right?
Crucial and download their utility and they
and you got the right RAM.
Yeah.
And how much total did you put in?
4, 2 matching sticks.
I don't know why that would slow it down.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even there's some definitely stuff on the startup that I know was slows the startup up, but it's necessary because it's not my my office here. We're small.
Even if it were like lots slower RAM, you wouldn't notice.
Yeah.
That wouldn't do it. I think it's a coinkydink. Once you're operating it, is it slower?
It doesn't. Nothing. It's all slow. No, nothing works well.
It's just slow.
Yeah.
You know, but it would take longer to start up because you have to check more RAM. But now you got a situation where Even everything else is going slowly.
Yeah.
You know, I would try doing, this is a useful diagnostic tool. You sound pretty sophisticated. Maybe you could do it. Is you need another, a boot CD with another operating system on it, like Linux, that you could boot to and see if the system works okay with Linux. You'll be testing two things by doing that. One, to see if your Windows install is corrupted. Two, to see if your hard drive's messed up. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I mean, that's a little over my head as far as...
Yeah, you know, you can... Yeah, this is something everybody should have a boot disk lying around. Somebody's saying maybe... Rocklaw's saying maybe the page file. Actually, that shouldn't be it. You're letting Windows manage the page file, I'm sure the...
Yeah, I set that setting to, you know...
Let Windows manage.
Yeah.
I think it's probably your hard drive is dying or is dead or not dead but is having trouble.
Yeah, because it was working fine before I died.
I know, but you know, recheck all the cables. This is exactly consistent with the hard drive being bad. You also might want to update the ESCD. You know that. That's in the BIOS. That's the enhanced system configuration data. When you reset that, what happens is it gives you the chance to say to the machine, oh, I got new hardware in here, so you figure it out. Maybe that's what's going on. It's an old machine. Maybe the battery died. It's a coincidence. Royal Fury has a good question. What happens if you put the old RAM back in?
He should be there.
Hello? All right. Maybe he gave... Oh, there he is.
I'm sorry. I put it back in, and it was still slow.
Still slow. So, see, now we know it's not really the RAM.
Okay.
That was just a coinkydink.
Okay.
It was working until you broke it. No. Runway, that's me. That wasn't me. I was reading the chat room. I think it's very commensurate with a bad hard drive.
Okay.
And so...
We're getting ready to switch over to Windows 7, but I'm just waiting. You know, just we have 7 to do, so it's a couple bucks to get them all done.
Yeah, wow. I would, you know, cheap. It's hard drives are cheap. They're not hard to acquire. I would get a new hard drive and just see what happens. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 8888 Ask Leo. Another hour to come. Actually, two more. Give me a ring. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, which never work, by the way. At least if you listen to this show, you know they never work. Cell phones, talk a lot about those. They work a little better, but they still have problems. We also talk about home theater with our good friend Scott Wilkinson and digital photography with our friend Chris Marquardt. Johnny Jett joins us to talk about travel. I think he'll be joining us about 25 minutes, 33 after the hour. Anything you want to talk about, anything you want to do with tech, it's got a chip in it. I'd love to talk to you about it. Let's start with Patrick on line 4. He's in Montrose, Michigan. Hey, Patrick.
Greetings from the chat, Mr. Mayor.
Greetings. What's your handle in chat?
MechMan.
It's MechMan, everybody. Does that mean that you play a lot of mech games?
Well, it's mostly because I've been a BattleTech player for a long time.
BattleTech is what they call it, yeah.
Well, BattleTech's the role-playing...
That's the real-life version.
Yeah, it's where you have miniatures on the table and move around. But
yeah. That's cool. That's really cool. Do you still do that?
Yeah, well, not as much now because the local group kind of moved out since all of them went to college.
Tabletop gaming, though, is making a resurgence. It's very interesting to see the interest in all of this.
Yep.
What can I do for you?
Well, my question is, I'm looking at trying to keep my computer running for a few more years. I mean, it's ready to go into kindergarten here shortly. And I'm looking at going into a dual monitor setup. I have my old 24-inch high-def TV that's also set up for monitor, but it's a widescreen, and then I have my regular 19-inch LCD TV. I'm wondering, can I do that with two monitors of two different sizes? Can I put them as a one dual monitor setup?
Well, you can if your video card supports it. It's pretty easy to do.
Right. Well, the video card has two ports on it. One is digital, one is analog.
Yeah.
And from what I found online...
Well, that doesn't mean it can support two monitors. It may well just have two ports, one depending on the monitor you want to use.
Right, and that's the thing. What I found online is that they're conflicting between yes, you can, no, you can't, you need special software, that kind of thing, and I'm really much confused at this point.
You probably need a new video card. Lots of video cards came with analog and digital connectors, but only one could be used at a time.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't unusual. You're using Windows XP?
Windows 7, actually.
Oh, good. Well, 7 handles dual monitors very well. Very, very well. It's Microsoft's really kind of licked this. As long as you got the hardware to do it. What's the video card you have?
It's a... Oh, geez. I'm trying to remember.
Oh, don't worry
it's
about
a,
it.
It's a X1600 series Radeon card. I just remember that because I had to install Oblivion again, and it asked for...
Yeah, that's pretty old. You know, you could probably for $50 get a newer video card that would be better for your gaming and would give you dual monitor support. No problem right out of the box.
The other thought was, would it be easier just to buy a whole new system?
Well, it'd be easier, yes, but would it be more heavy pricey? Almost all systems now can handle two monitors. That's not too hard. You know, these video cards are so powerful these days. The real issue is, you know, this X1600, let me just see if I can find something out about it. That was the original equipment, wasn't it?
No, that was, the original equipment was, it was a Sony Vaio, and I have since turned it into a Frankenstein machine with a new motherboard and more RAM and the new video card and sound card.
So what, have you looked at the AMD site? I'm looking at the X1600 page right now. Does it say it supports multiple monitors? Because that's the key.
I did not find anything on it.
If it did, they would say.
Right, yeah, I wasn't sure because, like I said, a lot of people have said, oh, you just need a special driver for it. Others said,
wow,
no.
It does support Crossfire. That's interesting. That's the capability to have two video cards sharing the screen.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing you can do that's a simple, easy thing to do is USB monitor. Inexpensive USB monitors might even cost less than a new video card. They certainly cost less than a new computer. You plug it in, and that's handled by the software, and it actually does a pretty good job. I have an X. Okay, so Web956 says it does support two displays. So I'm not sure why you're having trouble. It may be you go into the settings in the BIOS. You may have to go in the settings in the ATI. What do they call it? The Catalyst drivers.
I wasn't sure because, you know, I was trying to fiddle with it and I didn't want to, like, just start ripping things out of the computer at this point.
It used to be a hard thing to do. But it's gotten easier and easier thanks to good support in the operating system. Dual monitors on the Radeon X16. I'm reading. Sounds like this is a problem card for that. I'm reading a thread, which you might see now in the chat room, MechMan, that says it's not working too well.
Thinking probably get a new video card.
New video card's cheap, and any video card that you get would be much better than this old one. So I think just get a cheap video card. It's something that Windows 7 does really well. Used to be very hard in XP, but it's something Windows 7 does very well. It'll just see it, and you can just plug it in. It's kind of cool. Dual monitor support is so simple nowadays. Used to be, we actually did tech TV, we did screensavers episodes on how to get it working. It was so complicated. Lots easier now. Hey, it's nice to meet you, Mech Man. Good to talk to you. Let's go to Tyler, Los Angeles. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Kind of a similar problem, it sounds like, on line one.
Yes, hello?
Hey.
Hey, good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. What's up?
Anyways, I was at my apartment, then I went back to my my father's house, and I turned on my computer that I haven't turned on in about 2 months. And all of a sudden, it won't even send a signal to my monitor.
It's your dad's fault. He broke it. He's been messing with it.
I think it's
Dad.
My brother, actually.
Yeah, or your brother. Oh, you got a younger brother?
Twin, actually.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, I don't think it has been turned on ever since. I did put a new NVIDIA 350 in. I think it was 340, 350.
Uh-huh. Nice card, yeah.
And it worked fine. It's a 2008 gateway.
You put it in before or after your bad twin messed with it?
Oh, I have no idea.
No, I'm just teasing you. Was it working? It was working fine with the new card. Then you left for 2 months, and then it stopped working?
Yeah, I've tried multiple inputs, DVI, HDMI, VGA, all of them, and it still doesn't work. I've tried different monitors. I took all my RAM out, took all my video. I took both of my only video card out.
So when you say it doesn't work, what happens? Where does it fail? Does it just not turn on?
No, I turn on my computer. I can hear everything booting up and everything.
You hear... But does the screen turn on at all?
No. That's my issue. The screen doesn't even turn on, but I can hear my computer.
But you feel like the computer's working, but the screen is never bright, never lights up.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a couple of things you want to first check: make sure that monitor's okay, make sure the cable is okay. Could be either one of those.
I tried different monitors too.
And the same thing.
Yes.
Okay. Well, in 2 months, if you put a new video card in, sometimes it could work its way out. Maybe there's not enough power. So a second monitor with the same cable or a new cable?
Oh, with the same cable.
Try a new cable or a different cable.
Okay.
I mean, you would think, why would a cable fail? But they do. I don't know why.
I thought that was pretty crazy when the person offered me a warranty or something when I went to Best Buy.
No, I don't do those. You can, if it's a cable, it's cheap. The video card. Now, did you have? It's a good question from the chat room. Do you have a motherboard video on that computer that you could try?
I took out my old graphics card when I realized it wasn't working. I put the old one back in that I know works.
Yeah,
and it still doesn't work.
Still doesn't work.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. I would swap the cable. You've eliminated all the possibilities. Whatever remains, however improbable, must be the culprit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I can see all obstacles in my way.
Mm-mm-mm.
Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
It's gonna be a bright,
sunny day. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the number. I have been informed Johnny Jett is traveling. He is on a plane, so our travel guru, Johnny Jett, will join us next episode of the Tech Guy Show. And he will talk about getting the most online out of travel. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Looks like Cindy is next in Ventura, California. Hi, Cindy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hey, Cindy!
I talked to you a couple of weeks ago about my Windows 8 and my Skype, but this is a different question.
Figured it out, by the way. I guess I told you, but I tried it afterwards, and then, yeah, you have to use the desktop Skype to approve your new your new friends. Which is one of the things I don't like about Windows 8. It's very confusing because there's Metro versions of everything, or whatever they call it, modern UI. And desktop versions, like you have two Internet Explorers, two Skypes, and it's right. Unclear what to do with. I mean, it's just it's kind of kooky.
It's kooky.
Kooky. That's the word I'm going to use. By the way, there's rumors that Microsoft is going to back down a little bit on Windows 8, and maybe they admit they made a mistake and let you turn on the boot to desktop, so you don't have to deal with it. Yeah. That'd be more like Windows 7. I actually installed $10 worth of software to make it look just like Windows 7 from StarDock. And now I'm much happier. I got the start menu back, all that stuff. It's more like Windows 7. And now I don't mind Windows 8 so much.
Yeah. I have a quick question for you, though.
Okay.
My husband bought me a 3D TV.
Good for him.
And it comes with those glasses, And... I was watching the movie this morning. They're just not that great. And I was wondering if you can recommend a good brand that I could actually buy that would improve the quality.
They're not going to get better. So let me guess what you don't like about them. They're dim, right?
They're dim, and they don't look as 3D as you think they would, like in a theater. Obviously, it's not going to be as good as a theater, but...
The TV's using a different technology. Most TVs don't use the same kind of passive. Do you have to charge your glasses?
No.
You don't?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so there's It's an LG. What is the manufacturer?
LG. Yes.
Yeah. So LG has started offering, and I think others are starting to do it too now, 3D TVs that use the passive glasses. It's Real D, the same technology used in movie theaters. The nice thing about that, the glasses are cheap.
Yeah.
And maybe they're kind of cheap, because you can go, there are lots of people that will make nicer 3D glasses for you.
Yeah, and that's what I was wondering, but are they going to be any better?
Well, it depends. That's why I'm wondering, if it depends what you don't like about it. The dimness you're going to have to live with.
Okay.
If it doesn't look super 3D for you, you are watching 3D content, right? When you pull the glasses down, it looks funny, doesn't it?
Right.
Yeah, okay.
So they're definitely 3D movies, but okay. It's more the quality, I think, the actual 3D part of it isn't as 3D as I thought it would be.
So you might want to buy better quality 3D glasses. There are lots of people, including Oakley, you probably know from the sunglasses people. They make 3D glasses. You've got to figure out what the 3D technology is your TV's using. My guess is it's Real D, R-E-A-L-D. So check and see. It'll say somewhere on the TV, on a sticker on the back, or it'll say it in the... in the manual, but somewhere it'll tell you what kind, because there's several different kinds of 3D technology.
Okay. But for real, if I do buy better glasses, it should improve.
Well, I can't promise you. I'm not sure why it doesn't look real 3D, super 3D to you. Did these glasses come with a TV?
Yeah, they came with a TV.
It might be. It's very possible that... they gave you cheap ones, and so it's possible that maybe if you got good ones. The problem is the good ones are kind of expensive. There's a company, the best ones are made by a company called Gunnar, G-U-N-N-A-R-S, gunnars.com. And
they make... kind from the movie theater, you know what I mean? They're that
Yeah, cheap they're stuff. Cheap. Yeah, they gave you cheap ones. Yeah. So if you go to gunnars.com, they make LG-compatible 3D glasses that you keep, you own. In fact, you can, if they're Real D, you can even wear them to the theater. I think the main reason they make these is for people who don't want to wear the cheap movie theater glasses.
Okay.
GUNNARS.com, and they make LG compatible 3D eyewear.
Okay.
And I they're amber lenses, they're more comfortable, but they're not cheap either. But I have friends who have them. Don't you, John, own your own 3D glasses? John Slanina, I think you do. He does. He's going to his drawer now to pull out his own personal 3D glasses. Because when you go to the movie theaters, who makes these? Are these...
Anaglyph. These are Anaglyph.
Oh, these are Anaglyph. These are red blue.
Yeah, I own those.
But
my TV came with six pairs.
Yeah, he says his TV came with them. If you don't like the TV ones, you can go out and get better ones. Some people say, make sure you're watching in a darkened room.
Okay.
It may be. I don't see 3D real well because I don't have binocular vision. I only use one eye at a time.
Oh.
But you say 3D looks good in the movie theater for you.
Yeah, it looks fine. It's possible, like you said, the room wasn't really
dark in the room. And make sure you're using, somebody else in the chat room suggested, and I think this is a good point too, use stuff that was made in 3D, like Avatar would be a good example. Not stuff that is 3D upgraded, because the 3D effect will not be as effective.
Okay. Yeah, because, you know, when you have HBO and you get, like, the free movies on there.
Yeah, that may not be real 3D. I'd get a... Do you have a Blu-ray player?
Yes.
Go out and get a, you know, something recent, Toy Story, something that's made in 3D. Not upgraded. Avatar's a very good example. The Hobbit. You want to own The Hobbit, don't you?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I bought The Hobbit Blu-ray, and that comes with 2D and 3D.
Okay.
And, in fact, it'd be cheaper to buy that and test your existing glasses than to go out and buy these new ones. They can be like $150.
Okay.
So get the Hobbit. You want it anyway. That's a good test of your 3D. See how the 3D looks there. It's well made. It's definitely 3D. And see how it looks with your glasses. They gave you cheap glasses, but that's all it really needs. You know, most of the other TVs, my TV, my Panasonic, I have to charge the glasses up, plug them in via USB and charge them up because it's got shutters that are opening and closing like that. Those are active 3D. So it was a big deal when Panasonic came out with passive 3D because it meant you could charge less for the glasses. They're basically like sunglasses. They're polarized in different directions. And so that's let's give it a good test before you spend a lot of money on third-party 3D glasses. They're not going to be necessarily much better. Let's see, home theater 3D, does it look as good? I think it does, as movie 3D. The screen's a little smaller. Dark in the room. I think. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the number in our chat room is at techguylabs.com. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. Love to hear from you. Congratulations to Dr. Mom, who's finished her chemo. That's always a nice feeling, isn't it? Let the hair grow back. Good going, Dr. Mom. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Our chat room really has become is family for us. It really is. It is, that's one of the best things about it. If you can get in there, at first, if you've not been in a chat room before or not been in a busy chat room before, it might be a little bewildering because it scrolls by so fast. But once you kind of get to know the personalities, people like MechMan, Dr. Mom, and Padre SJ, who's in there all the time. Big Ginge from the UK, Loquacious. And, of course, our great chat mods. Once you get to know them all and you feel comfortable, it is like a family. In fact, I know that all week long people have been in the chat room as they've watched the drama unfold in Boston and been kind of virtual hand-holding with one another. And this happens all the time. It's kind of fun to watch. So we're glad we've got the chat room. You can become a part of it. It's wide open. Anybody. You're all welcome. Just visit techguylabs.com and click the chat link there, techguylabs.com. Derek's in Lakewood, California, our next caller. Hi, Derek. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome.
Hey.
Don't be down, man. It's going to be okay.
I think there might have been a recall on it. Unfortunately, I was never notified. So I'm starting to create.
I don't know if you're on Skype or if you're on a cordless phone and it's cutting in and out. I can't quite make out. You said your video card is being recalled or is it having trouble?
I took my computer to somebody and because at first I thought it got hit by a virus or a worm.
Yeah.
But it turns out that the tech told me that there might be a video card and possibly memory board concerns. And
Do you like this guy? Do you know? Do you trust him?
He came recommended by a good friend.
Okay. So what was the problem? What was going on?
I was on a file sharing site and I downloaded a file, and the next morning when I went to use my computer, it booted up. But then I got like this pattern that blocked out my screen completely from one corner to the other. So I just thought that the unit had a hiccup, and I forced it shut down.
The pattern, did it say anything, or was it just kind of like weird?
No, I've come to see several patterns, but it's not.
It's just like a random pattern, a video card.
Yes.
Hiccup.
It's not.
I understand your concern because a file sharing site, very often when bad guys want to distribute malware, one of the things they do is they'll say Madonna's new album here, download it. You download it. Okay, now you got to run it to open it up, and it's not Madonna's new album. It's malware. So that would be a completely reasonable thing to say, gee, maybe I downloaded something bad. And I could tell you feel that way because you mentioned that you were on that site the night before. But usually, if you do get malware, it might lock your computer out, but it usually will say something like, give me money and I'll unlock it.
I actually tried going in there a couple of times in safe mode, and I even tried to I guess, reload Windows from the internal recovery system.
And no, and nothing, but, huh?
You know, it started, but then it would just, the screen would just lock up again. And I don't think anything was happening because it would never come back to me. The only thing that I tried to get some information off the internet, and this particular model, I believe, may have had a recall on it.
Right.
But I don't know because I was never notified.
So there's so many things it could be at this point. And I think if you've got a good tech, you're going to have to trust him. Sounds like he looked at the hard drive and didn't see a virus. So what I would first do is I would maybe scan the drive and maybe do it from another computer, scan the drive to see if there's anything on it that looks suspicious, because you did, after all, have that experience the night before. But it could be other things. It could be the video card overheating or dying. Could be video card drivers. It could be... it could be Windows itself is dying. So there's lots of you know, little things that could cause this. It could be your RAM. That's unusual. It would be more likely the video memory, not the system memory, that would cause this. He's being led to believe that by the pattern. When you see a pattern on the screen, what that means is the area of memory on the video card where it stores the screen buffer is being overwritten by data. And so it looks like a herringbone pattern or something, but what it really is stuff that's normally in that buffer is information about what dots to turn on, what not. If it's just garbage in there, you're going to get exactly what you're getting. So it could be malware that was written so badly that it's or intentionally written badly, causing a buffer overflow into your video RAM. It could be a driver that got corrupted. It could be an actual hardware error. And the only way to try this is to try different things. Now, you said you rebooted into safe mode. That means that you disabled the video card driver and still did that in safe mode?
Yes.
Okay, so now we know it's not the driver. So that's good, I guess. I mean, at least we know we're narrowing it down. It could be the video card, but it also could be malware on there. Did you reboot from a new version of Windows or reinstall Windows? Did you do that?
Actually, it came with Vista, but somebody gave me an official Windows 7 disk. It's not the... It's almost like a promotional disk. It's not the original.
Yeah, that's
like,
fine. So if you can boot from another copy of Windows from a CD or another operating system, this is what I was telling a fellow earlier on the show. Really nice, really handy. Everybody should do this while you got the weekend, you got a little time. Download, it's not a bad idea, a copy of Linux for Windows is free from Ubuntu. Not for Windows, but for PCs, or have a copy, a boot disk that you can boot up into, have maybe a hard drive that you can boot to that has Windows on it. Because if it's something corrupted on your hard drive and you boot into another operating system and everything works, well, then we know, and it's an easy fix. If you restart in another version, another operating system, and the same thing is happening, then we've eliminated a whole host of possibilities, and it's almost certainly a hardware problem. Like your video card or your monitor or something like that. It doesn't sound good. I would trust the tech. I think you're going to have to because this is the kind of thing that somebody can do if they have the right tools. And if you're so inclined, I mean, if you really want, you know, once this happens, it's kind of too late. So now would be a good time to download a boot CD. There are quite a few, the Ultimate Boot CD and so forth, that are designed to help recover. Of course, you have to have an optical drive, and newer computers no longer have optical drives. So if you like this Acer S7 that I just bought that I love, has no optical drive, but I can boot to a USB key. So, of course, what did I do? I made a Windows boot drive on a USB key. So if you have problems, you can at least eliminate the current operating system and see if it's being caused by hardware or software. That's the big divide, isn't it? Is this a hardware problem or a software problem? If you can boot into a completely different disk with all different software and the same thing happens, it has to be a hardware problem. And I'm presuming the tech did that. And if he did, then it is. It's either the video card or something else. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Strange. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, something you want to know, Gary in Los Angeles on line four. Hi, Gary. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. My pleasure.
I'm perplexed and sort of going along with some of the other calls today.
It seems to be hardware despair day on the Tech Guy show.
I have a computer that was built for me about 2 months ago, and I'm having a problem with it when you turn off the computer just on the button on the top of the case and then try to turn it back on. I don't get anything. My monitors don't come up. There's no picture on them. It just says no signal when I power the monitors up. And if I unplug the computer from the wall for about 5 or 6 minutes and then plug it back in, it comes up and it works fine.
Huh.
And monitor's on. And I talked to somebody, and he suggested that I change out the power supply.
No, I don't think so. So when you're just tapping the on-off switch, right?
Yes.
You have to look and see what Windows is instructed to do when you do that. It may be hibernating. It may be sleeping. But it probably is not turning itself off. When you do that, do you see a whole shutdown process? Or does it just go? Is just pretty quickly go?
No. It goes through a shutdown process, and it updates Windows. I'm running Windows 7, and it'll update Windows 7.
It runs the update and everything.
Yeah. So, and I generally turn it off every night. I use it for my business, and I'm turn off every night.
Because there are known problems with Hibernate and so forth, and I thought maybe what was happening was that the system was hibernating. And then you couldn't get it to wake from hibernate. By unplugging it, you said, "Don't stop hibernating. I've just shut you down." So okay. Don't use what now. If you go to the start menu and select shutdown from the start menu,
yes,
same problem.
Well, yeah, the same problem. Yeah.
Okay. So for some reason, I see this a lot. I don't know why it happens, but for some reason. You can't turn off the machine, then turn it back on again. You have to unplug it. I would say there's probably a faulty power supply or a fault. There's something hardware wrong with it. Maybe the switch. One thing to try, though, is unplug. Do you have USB devices plugged into the thing?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So somebody in our chat room said, sometimes that happens with USB devices. You might try, just as an interesting thought, as a thought experiment, unplug all the USB stuff and see if the same thing happens. Just a thought.
It's a wireless keyboard, and so it's got a...
Wireless keyboard you don't have to worry about, but hard drives, anything that draws a lot of power.
Yeah, I've got three external hard drives.
Yeah, there you go. It probably has something to do with it. So I would... try it just as an experiment. Unplug those external. Can it boot up without them?
Yes.
Unplug them. And see if you can just shut down and turn it back on. If that fixes it, then one by one, don't plug them all in again, but one by one plug them in and see where it starts to have problems. It could be that those USB drives are drawing too much power. I really thought it was a hibernation problem. This is a very common problem. Could be that you need a bigger power supply. Or maybe the power supply itself is kind of getting flaky. It could be also that it's attempting to boot off one of the external drives, and that's hanging it up. So by powering it down completely and then powering it up, you're kind of changing the order of boot. If, you know, are the drives plugged into a powered hub, or are they plugged directly into the computer?
The drives are plugged into the back of the computer. Actually, I've got them going through a network for USB docking.
Okay. So they're not plugged into the computer. They're plugged into a hub, a dock that's powered, right? Is it powered?
Two of them are, and one of them is not.
Yeah, try unplugging them. So I'm giving you some stuff to try. I don't know what the answer is, but try some of these things. Unplug all the USB stuff. See if the same thing happens. This is the problem with... I was almost going to say this is a problem with building your own. It kind of is, because who are you going to call now? I guess you'd call the guy who built it for you. Do turn off hibernation. Hibernation is a bad idea. Web3911 in the chat room says, check your BIOS power off status. Make sure that you don't have something like when powered off by the button, stay off. I'm not sure exactly if that's such a thing, but hey, it's worth trying. There's a few things to look at. Good luck. I wish I could be more help. We're getting a lot of tech support today. Not sure why. Must be the... Is it a full moon? No. Line 4. Oh, no. We just talked to line 4. Line 5. Ed, Oklahoma City. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Ed.
Hello. Leo, well, how are you doing?
I am well. How are you, Ed?
Okay. In the last couple of weeks, I just come up to the cutting, almost to the cutting edge of technology. I got me a smartphone.
Woo-hoo! I just gave my mom her first smartphone. How do you like it?
Oh, all right. It's one of them that you're not too fond of, though.
Well, now, wait a minute. What phone is that? Don't assume. What phone is it?
It's a Motorola Razr.
Oh, yeah. I'm not too fond of those. No, they're all right. They're all right.
It was free. It was free.
Hey, so. That's the right price.
I like free.
I
wanted
do too.
An S4, but I couldn't afford it. And an S3, they still wanted money. I could get an S2 for free, but the salesman said this $550 phone was free. So I got it. And let me tell you, it's amazing, though, some of the things that... Here's what happened. I got it a couple of weeks ago on a Saturday, and I was setting it up, and it's asked me, do you want Google now to track your location? I said, why not? And I said, go ahead. Well, the next week, I teach a class at the local hospital, Windows operating system, and I go there from 1 to 3 in the afternoon, 4 days a week. Well, I did that, and then the next week, about 12:40 when I leave home to go there, Google Now popped up and said, you got 11 minutes to go to work, and told me what the...
Nothing to fear there. That's cool. Let me talk about that. That's something new called Google Now, and I love it. We'll talk when we get back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, can I talk about ShareFile? Let me talk about something. This will cheer me up. I need some cheering up. Let me talk about something I really like. So it happens that in my business, and I bet it's true in your business too, we have to share files. And as time's gone by, these files have gotten bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, you know, whether they're contracts or drawings or images, in my case, audio files. They're too big to email anymore. You get bounce backs. There's also the issue, if you're in a business where security or privacy or control is important, say the medical or legal professions, you don't want to send stuff over email because that's, you know, that's just a recipe for disaster. Nothing's private on email. It's like sending a postcard, you know. And I see all the time, I see lawyers in their email, they say, if you receive this in error, delete it immediately. This is, you know, that works. You need ShareFile. Share your stuff securely. You can make it via email if you have the Outlook plugin. It looks just like an email, but it's not. What you're sending is a link to a secure store in the cloud. You can control who can download the file, how often, for how long. So you could say they have access to this for a week only or whatever. You'll get an email when they open the file. You could password protect the files for ultimate control. ShareFile is going to change the way you work. It's secure file transfer for business. And, of course, it's from Citrix, so that's why you know it's good. ShareFile.com. It's how I share files now all the time. And let me point you to the website, ShareFile.com. And right at the top there, click that green microphone up there. It says radio listeners. That includes podcasts too. Then you can try the free trial and use our offer code TECHGUY to get 30 days free. ShareFile.com. Try it today. You get a 30-day free trial. They say, again, radio, podcasts too. ShareFile.com. It is the way to share files in business. And, you know, if you're in medicine, it's HIPAA compliant, federal regulation compliant in almost every profession. ShareFile.com. Use the offer code Tech Guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And it's time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. Look who's here. Look who just flew in. Johnny Jett's here. Hey, Johnny, welcome.
Hi. How you doing?
We thought we weren't going to have you today because you were flying somewhere.
I just landed in Toronto.
Oh, beautiful Toronto.
And I cruised through, you know, the customs and everything, which is something we can talk about today.
Let's talk about this because I, you know, I used to go to Canada 1 week a month for 5 years, and I kept meaning to do this because I would, every time you get to Canada, you wait in line and you go, it's a long line because everybody's getting off a bunch of planes at the airport. You have to go through the border crossing, the customs control, and then you have to go through customs briefly and they check your bags or not. Same thing in the United States. If you come into the United States a lot, if, it could be a very long line. But there are these ways to speed it up. So did you get, what is it called, a Nexus card? What did you get?
Well, the Nexus is for Canada. So actually, there's a couple secrets. One is that you can apply for a Nexus card, and it's only $50. The global entry is what you really want, and that's $100.
Global, it means more than one country.
Global entry, yeah. That will get you access, you know, whenever you land in the United States, you can go through, you can go right to the kiosk and just get processed like that. And it's so much quicker.
So now, okay, so what is involved? It's not just giving them money because obviously the point of this is they've somehow vetted you ahead of time. They've proven your identity. They know that you are a nice guy. They don't have to ask you every time.
It's a long process, actually. You just can't get it next week if you
and,
want.
As I remember, I had to go to the airport and get questioned by customs people and stuff.
Exactly it. So what you first have to do is you have to go onto their website. So it's global entry. Is it .org? I got to quickly check.
But
you go onto their website.
Yep.
And then you fill out all the information. They want to know exactly which countries you've been to and all this stuff.
It's .gov. Globalentry.gov.
Perfect. And then, so after you fill it out, they're going to contact you. And it took months for them to contact me.
I kind of gave up on that. Yeah.
And so then they approve you, and then you have to go make your appointment. And then making the appointment, you know, there's not a lot of slots available. Right. So that's the one bad part about Nexus, because when you apply for the Nexus, you have to go to an office near the border.
So yeah, Canadian Customs.
Has Canada, or you can go to the airport in Canada.
What countries does Global Entry get you to?
Well, to get into the United States, you can go from anywhere.
Ah.
So this speeds your re-entry back. Exactly. So when I land, you know, sometimes, especially now they're all talking about the sequester, which starts tomorrow. You know, they're cutting back, you know, the federal government's cutting back, you know, all these different.
Fewer customs agents.
Well, they're worried about that, and also TSA screeners. Although I just went through security at Palm Beach Airport. And the agent said they're not really worried about long security lines, which I was shocked because most people, or at least the media.
I'm worried about long security lines.
Yeah.
So, okay, are they going to give me an iris scan? What do they do to prove I'm me?
Yeah, they do. So they take your fingerprints. They take your iris scan. And then when I land in Canada, like right now, I just rolled up to the machine and I hit English. And then I scan my eyes and answer the questions really quickly. I mean, not really quickly.
But no human checks you.
Well, after it prints up a card, and then there's a human there to take your card from you, like, you know.
So is it really? It's not a faster process. It's just a shorter line.
Oh no! It's a much faster process. I can go from the airplane to the gate in a few minutes.
Yeah, I should have done this.
Or you could be there hours.
Yeah, the lines can be very long. Yeah,
they can be very long, especially in the summertime when people are traveling and into the United States. I just roll right up. And what's great about going into the United States, you don't even need to fill out the printed
You don't have to pull out that blue card that says, I am not carrying any more money than I had before?
Nope. You just roll up to the machine.
I don't have any cocaine with me, that kind of thing?
Nope.
Wow.
Nope. That one you scan
They probably ask you a lot about drug use, about smuggling. I mean, wouldn't a smuggler want this?
Yeah, but if you have any kind of record, you cannot get it.
Got it.
And one of my buddies, who's a big-time freaking flyer, he went to Hawaii 4 times last month just to get miles. Every time he went to Hawaii, he went for 3 hours.
Here's a guy who's a little bit unclear on what miles are all about. I just want to say, You're not saving any money if you fly to Hawaii for 3 hours.
Well, he was going from New York, and he found a cheap fare for like $350.
Oh, come on.
So he was racking up his elite status, is what people care about.
They do, because they want to sit in the front.
But guess what? They just took away his global entry card.
Why?
Because he pops around to different countries, too. Same thing.
Oh, yeah, sure. That's suspicious. You go for 3 hours. No, yeah. I was just collecting points. Yeah, right.
And they don't tell you why.
Wow.
And the one bad part about the global entry is that if you do use it, you're not supposed to bring any food in.
Right.
To America.
Right.
And anything like that. So,
because nothing that they would want to search.
It's really for business travelers, right, who don't buy souvenirs and all that stuff, and right, you just want to cruise through.
Yeah. And you don't have bags to check, because if you check bags, you're going to waste time at the bags anyway. This is people like just to get on, get off, and go. I like it. I wanted to do it. I should have done it. Now, let me ask you about, there's another thing called Clear. Have you done this?
You know, that's based out of San Francisco.
I know. And I did it, and then they went out of business, and now they're back.
They're back now.
So the idea of this is, this shortens the security line.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a member of Clear. They've invited me to do it. I just haven't had time to go up to San Francisco to do their application.
Now, this will be interesting to see if it's better the second time around. The first time around, it was a little embarrassing, to be honest with you. The idea is that you do the same kind of verification of who you are and so forth, and you can skip through these lines faster. But first of all, it's very few airports, and the airports that it's in, they don't have a separate Clear line. The Clear agent takes you and your stuff and barges into the front of the line. And right. I was embarrassed. Oh, I'm so sorry. No. There's people with kids, and they're barging you in. Hey, out of the way. I got a VIP here. No,
well, that's kind of like,
it's embarrassing.
That's kind of like TSA pre-check.
Yeah, it's embarrassing.
So,
if you
have the global entry, you automatically get enrolled in TSA pre-check. And pre-check,
that would
is
be better.
The best.
That would
that's
be
the
better.
Best. It's only for domestic flights.
Yeah.
But when I roll up to the airport and they scan your boarding pass, and they don't always accept you, but 90-something percent of the time, I think I've been accepted, I don't have to take my jacket off, my shoes off, my laptop out. I literally go through the machine in 10 seconds.
Oh, I want that. So global entry plus TSA. Can you get TSA pre-check by itself?
Yes, you can. And usually invited by the, if you're a frequent flyer, you've been invited probably already.
I don't fly enough.
But having global entry automatically enrolls you in that. And I love it. But it's only for domestic travel. But again, you know, I sometimes carry two laptops on me. You don't have to take them out.
I just, not to take off my shoes would be a,
not to, you don't have to take your shoes
more
off.
More than enough of a reward.
I love it. It's the best thing, and there's no one in these lines.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, there'll be a long line, like you just mentioned, and I'm just rolling up and going right through it. And everyone's like, what's going on? And it's like, all the cost is $50 to $100.
I just feel
and
like...
And by the way,
what?
One more secret. If you have an American Express Platinum card...
I do?
They pay for the global entry.
Really?
You pay for it with your American Express card, Platinum card, and they'll reimburse you.
Oh, that's a good deal. That's a good deal. You know why I have the Platinum card? I turn it on because we were going to Egypt, and one of the things that they have is they have helicopter medevac if you get sick.
Yep.
I wasn't sure how safe it was going to be in Egypt, so I got it for the family. So I thought, well, if anybody gets really ill, we can get them back to a hospital.
Well, that is a way to do it, but also it gives you it gets you into all the Delta and American Airlines clubs when you're flying that airline.
There's some good benefits. It's expensive, though. It's
$450 a year.
Yeah. But if you travel a lot, it's worth it.
And they also give you $200 towards upgrades or food on one.
You know where I've saved the money back? If you go business class international, they'll buy you a companion fare.
Yeah, but it's usually a high fare.
Yeah, it's very expensive.
It's like a non-discounted
fare. It's a little cheaper in the long run. You get two tickets for almost... just a little bit less than if you'd paid for it yourself. Yeah. JohnnyJet.com. He's our travel guru. I'm so glad we could talk to you. Have fun in Canada.
Thank you.
Take care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. They're asking, we have a priest in the chat room. They're saying, if you show up with a collar, do you still have to take off your shoes? Thank you very much, Greg. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Hey, let's face
it,
we're all trying to save money.
Hey, Johnny, I'm glad we could do this. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure.
I'll be somewhere far away.
Okay, we'll do the where the heck is he game.
You'll have to guess.
All right.
Leaving tomorrow.
Thanks, Johnny.
Take care.
Have a great... So you're going somewhere with your wife?
Yeah, tomorrow. I came to pick her up.
Little vacation. All right.
Never a vacation for me.
But your work is like a vacation for the rest of us.
That's true.
I love it. Thanks, Johnny. This was a good one. I love this. Thank you.
All right, good. All right.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. So I finally capitulated. I didn't want to do it. You know, I have to use Windows 8 because how am I going to help you if I don't? And I'm a big fan of Windows 7. I should say that up front. I think Windows 7 is the best version of Windows ever made. Loved it. Was a little reluctant about Windows 8. But one of the things I decided to do, and I think I was right in this, is at least if you're going to use the new version of Windows, you should get a touch screen. So I bought a laptop with a touch screen. Very nice, actually. Really beautiful, light laptop with a touch screen. And I spent the last month suffering. Suffering. Trying to use what we are not supposed to call in the tech press the Metro interface. Microsoft called it that and then apparently decided, no, we're not going to call it that. I think they got sued by a company in Germany named Metro. Believe it or not, they apparently forgot to check. Anybody using Metro? Is that okay? Anybody using that? So they call it the modern UI. But what it is it's that screen, the start screen now. They dropped, for those of you who haven't used Windows 8, they dropped the Windows menu in that lower left where you used to have the little Windows icon. You'd click it and there'd be a menu of things you could do. And in favor of that, they replaced it with a Windows start screen, which is a full screen and really is touch-centric because it's got big tiles, finger touch-sized tiles. So you launch apps by tapping the tiles. And, if you're on a tablet, that makes a lot of sense. In fact, this is exactly what the Windows RT tablets look like and even the Windows 8 phones. You tap the screen, tap the icon, it goes full screen. Everything's full screen. But I'm a desktop guy. And I was just a little frustrated by having to use this Metro interface. Furthermore, to really confuse things, and this may even be the worst part, Microsoft's created a new kind of application, a Metro application, a full screen application. And in many cases, Internet Explorer is a good case. There's two versions of Internet Explorer on Windows 8 machines. There's a Metro version of Windows of Internet Explorer, and there's a desktop version, and they're different. And it's but not so much that you know which one you're using at any given time. Remember, we had our caller earlier today who said I was having trouble because I was confused because I was using Skype on the Metro Skype, and it didn't have all the capabilities of the desktop Skype, so you have to have both. It's kind of kooky. It's a hybrid thing where they've got really a touch, a tablet interface and a desktop interface. And I, as I said, love Windows 7, and I've just struggled for the longest time. I know many people like it, and I should say this up front. There are people all the time say, oh, Leo, Windows 8 is great. You'll get used to it. It's one of, no, I gave it every attempt. I did everything I could. I stuck with it much longer than I would have normally. Never did get used to it. But for $10, you can make Windows 8 completely usable. And I'm now prepared to say this is the way. If you're having trouble with this confusion, the best thing to do is to use Windows 8 as a desktop operating system, much like Windows 7. There are improvements, so it's worth going to 8. Plus, it's going to be hard to get 7. Most computer companies now are only selling 8. If you go to stardock.com, there's two apps they offer, each $5, that will change everything. One's called Start 8. It gives you a start menu. It's back. Oh, I missed you. Where you been? Just like the old Windows 8 start menu. You tap it. You've got all the commands, all the applications, access to your control panels. It's so nice. It's so familiar. That's $5. Start 8. And then they have, and that by itself might be enough for you. But they also have another thing, which I really like, which is called Modern Mix. And what Modern Mix does is it takes the full screen Metro apps that are so confusing because they're not on the desktop anymore, and makes them open in a window on the desktop, just like apps used to be in the good old days of Windows 7. So now I can use my modern UI apps, but I use them in a normal way. If you decide, you want to see them full screen, you still have that capability. If you said, I want to go to the Metro mode, there's a little icon in the upper right-hand corner that lets you choose. so you can go into the modern mix or not. Charms Bar is still there. That's fine. I don't mind if it's still there. Some of the, you know, the old features of that are a little confusing, Windows 8 are still there. But, boy, just it was enough for me just to bring back the start menu and then to have these full-screen apps be, at least have the choice to have them be windowed. That's $5 to the modern mix. $10 total. Now Windows 8 feels like a normal operating system once again. Hallelujah. So thank you, stardock.com. I do recommend that if you have trouble with Windows 8, and if you've been avoiding Windows 8, as I know many of you have, because you've said, I don't know if I can get used to it, this is a good solution. Now it really does feel pretty much like Windows 7. It's very comfortable. Not bad. Not bad. A good solution. 8888 ask. I thought I'd pass it along in case there's some of you who are still on the fence about to Windows 8. I should mention that Mary Jo Foley, who we do a show with called Windows Weekly, has talked to her contacts at Microsoft, and she believes, confirmed, that the next version of Windows 8, Windows 8.1, codenamed Blue, which will be out this fall, will change some features of this Metro desktop. Particularly, they're going to allow you to say, I don't want to boot up into that start screen. I would like to boot up into the desktop. Now, it's unclear. That may not be available for any of the versions except the business versions of Windows 8. We're not sure about that. They're also adding a start button. Now, I don't think that's adequate. It's not a start menu, but where the start menu used to be, there'd be a button that takes you back to the Metro style start screen. That's not that. Who cares? There's a button there to do that. It's called the Windows key. Then many tablets have the button on the screen. That's I don't need that. I want a real start menu. And I think Microsoft should, but they don't want to admit that maybe they got it wrong. BurnTech in the chat room saying, well, why would you even spend the money to stick with Windows 7? Well, if you get a new computer, you may not have the choice. But also, there are new features in Windows 8. It's copying is faster. It's more robust. There are features in Windows 8 that are better. It is, you know, newer. 8888 asks, Leo, I guess a follow-up from WB4LCN. LG TVs have a setting, I did not know this, for the depth of the 3D, and it may be our caller didn't have that setting set deep enough. She was complaining that the 3D effect on her LG TV was not adequate. And the chat room's also giving me a lot of free ways to put start menus on there. I've tried a couple of them, like Classic Shell, and not been as happy as I am with Start 8, but I'll try some of these other ones. I think $5 is close enough to free that I can safely recommend this Start 8. This has not gotten in the way of anything. It's worked reliably. There seem to be no negative effects. 8888 ask Leo, that's the phone number if you want to talk about Windows 8, talk about privacy, talk about whatever is on your mind. Our chat room is available, and you hear me talk about them all the time. I do, because they are my brain. You can get into the chat room by going to our website and clicking the chat link, techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones right after this. No, Stardate is not on the Windows Store. Probably never will be. You have to get it from stardock.com. But right now, I want to talk about my phone system from Ring Central. Let me show you this. This looks like a normal office phone, does it not? Well, it is. With a few minor exceptions. It's a Polycom, beautiful two-line Polycom. We've got standard office phones throughout our office, but they're not connected to a big old PBX in the basement. They're connected to the cloud, to our cloud-based phone system from Ring Central. I was really challenged when we built this studio. I didn't really know what to do about telephones. We had made everybody use their cell phone in the old place, but now we're a bigger company with, you know, I can't make them use their cell phone. And I knew I was going to have to install a phone system, but I really didn't want to go to the phone company. Russell, my IT guy, told me about Ring Central. Could not be happier. Ring Central is an all-inclusive feature. Everything you'd get with a PBX and a whole lot more. Voicemail in your email. Faxes in your email. You can make phone calls from the business line using your cell phone and the Ring Central app. They can do text-based, you know, SMS messages. Business SMS, they call it, using your business number, incoming and outgoing. That's cool. And now RingCentral works with Salesforce.com. Use the RingCentral app for Salesforce, and you can integrate all your phone calls into your CRM system. Create new records for contacts and leads while you're in the phone call. Real-time call notes, too. Really makes Salesforce more productive, easier to use. Another nice feature. This is where you really get the benefits of being, you know, an internet cloud-based digital offering. All-inclusive pricing as low as $20 per month per user. And right now, we've got a special no-risk trial for you. Visit ringcentral.com. Use the offer code TWIT for 30 days free. Or call a special number just for you, 800-543-9980. And yes, we still have the deal. When you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to 20 phones total from RingCentral. That is another good deal. 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. RingCentral.
Love it.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Noe's on the line from Palm Desert, California. Hi, Noe.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Yeah, I got a problem. I bought an e-machine at a garage sale, $40.
There's your problem right there. Okay, go ahead. You got what you paid for.
Keyboard at $40. It came with a wireless keyboard and a flat screen.
That's good. You can use it for parts.
Okay, I'll take a chance. But I get home, I connect, and it says no signal on the monitor. So I try to monitor it out on my laptop, and everything's good with the monitor. So I go and I change out. Someone told me it might be the video card. So I go and I change out the motherboard on that e-machine because it's an integrated video card. I change out the whole motherboard for about $40. I change it out, and it still says the same thing.
Yeah, you got what you paid for, $40 computer that doesn't work.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, I already got $100 into it. Is there any way I can save it?
Yeah, well, that was your mistake. You should have just cut your losses at $40. It didn't work. It could, I mean, do you want to keep working on it? First of all, even if you got it working, e-machines were junk.
Oh, I know. Now I know, yeah.
Yeah. They were the low-price leader. Gateway bought them.
Uh-huh.
And they really were junk. You know, this continues on today, by the way. I just saw Paul Otellini, the president of Intel, in an earnings call, said he expected that we would be seeing by the end of this year $200 Windows computers.
Oh, wow.
And I understand people want cheap computers. Golly, I want a cheap. I wish there were a $200 car too. But there's a reason you can't get a car for $1,000. You can't make one that's good for $1,000. And it's the same thing with computing. Maybe we, you know, netbooks didn't do anybody any favors. The fact that you could buy $250 mini laptops really set the expectation in the market. And what's happened as a result, the PC market has cratered. PC sales dropped by the largest amount in history this past quarter, killing Intel, Microsoft, Dell, all the PC manufacturers. Because nobody wants them, because in order to make a computer that you want, they have to cost more than a few hundred dollars. They've got to cost, I would say, that the computer, now I have to say the prices have still dropped a lot. This is what an old guy like me still finds this ironic, because for years doing this show, we would always say, well, the computer you want is always about $2,500. If I said, oh, computers could cost you $2,500 today, you'd say, that's ridiculous. I won't pay it. Well, okay, so, yeah, I guess. But now we're talking maybe you need to spend, I would say, at least $800 or $900 for a decent computer.
Yeah, see, I got a laptop that I use, you know, mostly for everything. I got kids, so I bought it. You know, maybe it'll work.
I understand. And let me think about what we could do to make it work. The fact that the monitor's not seeing anything tells us that nothing. Do you hear sound when you turn this thing on?
The power turns on and everything, but it doesn't, you know, it doesn't throw anything out to the monitor, which works.
And you replace the motherboard. The motherboard is the video card, right?
It's got an integrated video card. So I replace the motherboard. There's only a power supply left, and, you know, and the processor and
So you took the old processor out and put it in the new motherboard?
Yeah.
Hmm. Could be the processor is overheating or is not properly seated. I mean, you spent $40 and then another $40 on a motherboard. I don't want to spend another minute helping you fix it because it's really not, it's just not, there's, I don't know what to say. It's not working. And I really don't know, I mean, maybe there's something to do to get it working, but it would end up costing you more than buying a new computer. You get what you pay for. Joan in Simi Valley, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call. I've been watching TV shows on the computer and really enjoying it for a while. And now when I go to watch things on the computer, even your show today, it says blocked plugin.
Oh, no.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Did you recently put some security software on there?
No, I haven't done anything like that.
So the plugin is Flash. Are you on Mac or PC?
Mac.
Ah! So, yeah, okay, so I know what's going on. You need to update your Flash. So Apple, this is actually a good thing, although it can be a little confusing and annoying. Apple keeps a list of unsafe software on your machine and updates it without your knowledge all the time. It doesn't have to be an update, you know, like you get updates from Apple. They're actually keeping a list of unsafe software, and they update it. And what it's decided is that the version of Flash you are using is too old. And it's unsafe. And it is. They're right. So it's easy to fix that.
How?
Go to, I think it's, let me see, get.adobe.com,
get.adobe.com.
Get.adobe.com. You can do this in your browser.
Okay.
And you'll see targeting customers. Just a big ad, but over in the lower right-hand corner, there's a download section, and you want to download Adobe Flash Player. Now, once you do this, it's just a standard download. You should be getting the current version is 11.7.700.169. That's not important. You're going to get the latest version by going to get.adobe.com.
And then lower right corner.
Lower right corner, there's a download section, and get Flash is that's what's out of date. And actually, you could go directly to get.adobe.com/flashplayer. Now, once you download this, it's an installer. You want to close all your browsers, Safari, Chrome, Firefox, anything you've got, and run the installer, and it will install it for all your browsers. And now Apple will say, oh, yeah, you're safe again. You've got the latest version of Flash.
They don't do that automatically. So many times I get these things, Apple wants to update.
Yeah, they would, except it's not owned by Apple. It's owned by Adobe. They should. And Adobe, the newer version of Flash, I think has an updater in it. You might not get this again. Yeah, Apple updates all of its software. And if you buy software on the App Store, it will update that automatically. My mom just got the latest version of Evernote. And it said, well, we can't install it. You downloaded Evernote from the Evernote.com. So I said, that's fine, Mom. Throw out the old Evernote. You know, take it out of your application folder, throw it out, and download it from now on from the App Store, because Apple will let you know there's updates automatically. And the problem is that these are what we call browser plugins. Flash, Java, there's quite a few. And the reason there's security issues is because they launch automatically when you go to a site that uses them. If you go to my site or you go to YouTube, you don't know that Flash is running. It just launches automatically. But if it's out of date, Flash in particular has a lot of security holes in it. And that's because the bad guys know that it's going to be launched automatically. Java, too. It'll be launched automatically. And so they can put bad stuff on a website. You go there, and without your knowledge, Flash gets launched, and your machine gets infected. So Apple, realizing that this is a problem, they can't force the update because they don't own Flash, but they can block old, insecure versions, and that's what they did to you.
So they're doing it for me, actually, when they do that. They're being nice guys.
They are. It's a little confusing. They should be. And unfortunately, the warning that you get is not very useful because it didn't tell you what was out of date. But that's what it is. Yeah, they're. But honestly, they are being nice guys because the alternative is to get infected, and that's something you don't ever want to have happen. So this is how Apple does it. Now, I understand. I agree with you. It's a little bit of a problem. Hey, the Gizwiz coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by the folks at Ting. Ting's the thing. Mom's playing on her Ting phone. That's the Galaxy Note 2. You like it? She's using her... Are you drawing something? She's drawing a picture of me. That's nice. So... Awesome. I want you to visit techguy.ting.com. Why do I like Ting? I'll tell you why I like Ting. Ting is a cell phone company that decided they didn't want to be like the other cell phone companies. They wanted to be nice. They didn't want early termination fees and long-term contracts. Wouldn't you love to love your cell company? Well, now you can with Ting.com. Go to techguy.ting.com. You'll save $25 on your first phone. But while you're there, before you even... buy the Ting device. Bring your current cell phone bill and go to their savings calculator. Find out how much you'll save with Ting. The way Ting works is great. It's based on the Sprint service. So if you have good Sprint connectivity where you are, you will get great Ting connectivity. And what you do is you decide on a plan. First of all, how many phones you need. This is why it's great for small businesses or families. You can have as many phones as you want on a single shared pooled account. So let's say it's a family of four, $6 per phone per month. We're going to get 1,000 minutes shared. Don't worry, this number is not that important. 2,000 text minutes shared. Let's get 3 gigabytes of data shared. That whole account for the whole family, everybody, all four phones, $110 a month, period. But here's the beauty part. If you use fewer than 1,000 minutes, we do that all the time, they rebate you the difference. What they do is they send you a bill at the beginning of the month, but then they only charge you what you actually use. You use more, no problem. There's no penalty. They don't ding you. They just charge you the next level up. Now, isn't that sweet? That's the way it should be. That's the way it should be. Plus, you get tethering and hotspot automatically, no additional charge. Of course, all the other stuff, voicemail, fixture and video messaging, three-way calling, caller ID. But I love it. They throw in tethering and hotspot. Ting. It's such a great idea. Visit techguy.ting.com. You'll save $25 on your first device. And, of course, they've got all the great devices like the Galaxy Note 2, my personal favorite. Ting is the thing. Try it today. techguy.ting.com. I love their customer support, too. No-hold customer support. You call them during business hours. Somebody who's empowered to fix the problem will be on the line with you, and they will not put you on hold. They will not transfer you. They will fix the problem. They also have help.ting.com with very active customer forums, video tutorials, startup guides. Makes it very easy to get going. No contracts, no ETFs. Ting. Love it. Techguy.ting.com. Try it today. Ice, ice, baby. I'm under pressure. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Don't you love the 80s? 8888, ask Leo. That's the number. Actually, you know what? Don't call because I think we're going to have enough to do here because look who just showed up in my monitor. The Gizwiz is here. Dick DiBartolo, Mads, maddest writer for 5 decades now, and a gadget hound who joins us every week to give us cool news, fun stuff to waste our money on.
Waste your money on. Well, there's no way to waste money on a gadget.
Well.
Is there? Unless you have a SkyMall catalog.
You know, I just bought the Erector set for the next Gizwiz episode.
Did it come already?
Yeah, it's here. So we're going to build. So we were talking about old toys. Wow. Mom, do you remember that I had?
It's 100 years.
100 years old? Set. Wow.
Yeah.
Mom, you remember I had Lego, right? I was really into Lego. But do you remember that before there was Lego, I had an Erector set?
Yes, you did.
She said I had an Erector set very young for a person my age.
But the main thing you had was a little record player.
Yeah, that's all right. We don't have to talk about that. Anyway, well, that's a motor. This one's motorized, and it's metal, because I guess some of the new Erector sets are only plastic.
Exactly. There's a bunch of them, but some of them have. What happened was the Erectoset, you could only build like squarish things because everything was metal. And then car model kits began to look like cars. And so they started doing combination kits of plastic and metal. But I believe some of them are all plastic.
I'm so excited. Yeah. I can't wait.
Oh, it's great. I'm thrilled you're getting that.
So that's coming up. But what do you want to talk about today?
Well, you know, you and I at CES, we saw 5 billion iPhone cases, all the same except different colors and felt a little different. Well, there's a new company, at least I haven't heard of, Absolute Technology. And they have kind of a neat little case. It's called Link Case, spelled strangely, Linkase. It's for the iPhone 5, and since people have on the forums complained about Wi-Fi on the iPhone 5, what makes this case a little bit different is it has a slide-out antenna. So you slip your iPhone 5 into the case, and then if you're in a very weak Wi-Fi area, you just raise the antenna, and it does increase the range and the strength. I actually, since it doesn't connect to the phone physically, I just stuck my iPod Touch into the Link case, walked down the hallway, closed 2 steel doors, which cut the Wi-Fi signal down to a single bar. And then when I raised that little antenna, it raised up to 2 bars. And that was downloading some stuff from the web. And the download picked up really fast. And also, it's a good-looking case, polycarbonate, little rubber shield around the screen, leatherized so it's not slippery, and it's under $50. So if you're looking for an iPhone 5 case, they've started out with the iPhone 5. They expect to do other models as time goes on. But at least it's something a little bit different for an iPhone case.
Neat. You know, yeah. When you move away from the iPhone, you realize what a great number of choices you have in the iPhone compared to other phones like the, you know, I have this HTC One, and HTC makes a case, or there are a few cases. This looks just like an iPhone, but you have to have a special case, and you just don't have choices.
We lucked in with the Galaxy 3. I think that's like the first Android phone where there's a wide choice of accessories.
And that's because they sold so many, right?
Yes.
That's pretty much, it's the iPhone and the Galaxy S3 are the top two phones. I do want to show you.
All you need to know.
Yeah, I just got a new gadget, which we'll also be talking about. This is the Pebble Watch.
And, oh my goodness.
Yeah, it finally came. This was a Kickstarter project that took forever, a year to get.
Leo, I thought you said it wasn't coming because red was going to be the last color made. Yours is black.
Yeah, so they sent me an email. They said, you know, we're having trouble with red.
Oh, okay.
Would you mind black? And I said,
after 6 months.
After 6 months. Exactly. I said, yeah, I'll take it, whatever you got. So now I've installed on here the Pebble application, and I guess it works with iPhones or Android phones, and it's going to somehow talk to my watch. But I'll review that in another day because I just got it today.
It looks large, but it looks pretty.
Well, you're the guy who was wearing the Microsoft Spot Watch for so long.
No. I was wearing and still am wearing the Iron Man USB data link.
And they call it the Iron Man because you have to have muscles of steel to lift your arm with this thing on here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, part of it is that I leave it connected to USB all the time, so the cable gets in the way when I'm on the subway.
Yeah, but no problems with running out of charge, huh?
No, not at all.
I wonder if this watch will have an extended battery. All right, Dickie D, hang on. We're going to do the Giz Fizz. I know you're going to interview my mom, and we'll see you on Tuesday for the Erectoset edition of the Giz Whiz podcast. We do that every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time on twit.tv/.
Yep. And play the What the Heck Is It for the new Mad.
Oh, yeah. What's on the cover of the new Mad?
The cover is Game of Thrones.
Ooh. With and Alfred inside, E. Newman on the Iron Throne.
Yeah. Inside is my takeoff on the Scotty vest. And, you know, so evidently he already found out about it. He's obviously not offended because he said, oh, I heard you did a takeoff in Mad. Do you need a new jacket?
He wants to send you more Scotty vest stuff. I love it. I wear nothing but Scotty vests. I'm wearing Scotty vest pants right now. It's got like all these pockets and stuff. They're gadget clothing. And so that's good. Yeah. It's perfect for parodying in Mad Magazine.
Perfect.
All right, my friend. Thank you so much. Hang in there. Nathan, do you want me to do a commercial right about now? It feels like...
No, we don't have one.
We don't? No? Nothing, nope, nothing. Huh? No commercials at all, huh? It's kind of like the GizWiz show, Dick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I'll... none, huh? No commercial. I guess I'll take another call then. How about Mark in Columbus, Ohio? Hi, Mark. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. Long-time listener, all the way back to you and Kate.
Wow, that's the old days of the screensavers in, 1998?
Yeah.
Thank you. I am very grateful for your support. Thank you.
Miss you guys.
All right. Yeah, but, me too. I miss us guys, too. That was a fun show to do.
It was. It seemed like it was. I want to ask you about the Galaxy Note 2. Why do you think they didn't give us the 64-gig version? And do you think they're going to do that for the... three.
You know, it's an interesting question. I bought for the HTC One, they don't have an SD card option. You know, most Android phones allow you to add memory by putting in a little micro SD card, and they're cheap. You can get 64 gig micro SD cards to add to the existing memory on the phone. The HTC One did not. They only sold, it's more like an iPhone, they only sold two versions, a 32 gig or a 64 gig. So I, you know, bit my tongue and I bought the expensive 64 gig version. Maybe Samsung's thinking, since we do allow you to add an SD card, we don't need to pack it with so much memory, and for that reason, we can keep the price down a little bit. But I got to tell you, on Android, it's not the same to have an external SD card or have more internal memory. It is always better to have as much internal memory as you can have. You could put music and photos on the external card, but applications, most of them want to run from the internal memory and so forth. It's always best to have more. So my only reasoning on this is Samsung just wanted to keep the price of the phone down. They didn't want to offer an expensive 64 gig version. I wish they had, because I love the Galaxy Note 2. It is a computer. And having lots of storage. Are you running out?
No, I haven't got one yet. I was thinking about getting one, but I
don't think that that's an issue, because you can buy a 64 gig external card and put photos and music, which are what mostly takes up the memory, on the external card. That works just fine. The only issue is that the applications, and, you know, it's hard to get more than 16 gigs of applications on your phone. So if you don't know that you need that much, I wouldn't worry about it. Get the standard Galaxy Note 2, and if you need more memory, more storage for your data, easy enough to buy a little micro SD card.
What do you think about they're going to do with the 60, three?
Well, that's what's interesting. I think we're due for a Galaxy Note 3. The Note 2 is now almost a year old. Mashable said the rumors are maybe a metal chassis for the Note 3. That would be interesting. Samsung has really seems to have decided that everything should look like the Galaxy S3, only bigger or smaller. They even have a Galaxy Note 8, an 8-inch Note, that looks just like a swollen Galaxy S3. So maybe it's time that Samsung changes its design. Maybe they will go metal. It's possible. But all I could do is speculate, because they haven't said. So we'll just have to keep watching. Hey, thanks for the call. Thanks for listening. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.